Hello, my name is Jess Lindley, and this is Arthur's Heroes, the podcast from Arthur's Place, the magazine and social network for young adults with arthritis. You can find us at arthursplace.co.uk and follow Arthur's Place on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. This podcast is supported by Novartis UK. We are grateful to Novartis for their support, but they have no influence over the content of the podcast. Parenting. Commonly acknowledged by everybody, both those who have done it and those who haven't, as the hardest job any of us will ever do. Everyone knows about the newborn stage and lack of sleep. Anyone who has ever worked with toddlers will be aware that they never walk anywhere if they can run instead. And once the years of school runs, trips, playing with friends and extracurricular activities begins, it never seems to stop. And so, when you throw arthritis into the mix, what happens then? Enter Lucy. My podcast guest today, Lucy already had two children by the time she was diagnosed with arthritis. Living a full and active life, training for half marathons, working part-time and being a hands-on mum, receiving a diagnosis of chronic illness was a massive shock for Lucy. Finding out that she was going to have a third baby was an even bigger one. In Lucy's words, she has had to learn to parent differently with her daughter. At the same time, she has had to adjust to a life she never imagined, giving up her job and learning to be less independent, all while trying to raise three children to be independent humans themselves. Today, I'll hear how she has redefined her role as a mum, a wife, a friend, an employee, and the struggle she has had along the way, convincing people that wanting to have a full and energetic life does not mean that you're not in pain and that you don't need help. We'll also find out more about Project Mum, a wellness kit created by Arthur's Place, and how it's helped Lucy in the hard yet incredibly rewarding role of being a parent. Lucy, welcome to Arthur's Heroes.
Oh, thank you.
Tell me a little bit about your family.
Yes, so I am married to Mark, and he and I have been together since we were 18. I have three children, Ethan, who is 10, Levi, who is 7, and Ada, who is 18 months.
They're lovely names. So tell me a bit about your life before you got diagnosed. What was it like? What did you enjoy doing?
Yeah, I was a typical mum in my 20s, I suppose. I worked. I was involved in the PTA. I was involved in the writing scene. I loved to run because that was my little escape. So I ran 3 times a week.
Gosh, I run 3 times a year, if that. And so you said that you worked. What job did you do?
So I worked for a local charity at a women's centre. So that involved me running the social media, doing events, running the book club, and welcoming people to the centre because it can be a bit overwhelming when they first come. The centre is connected to a domestic abuse charity, but the centre isn't just for women affected by abuse, is for every woman. Just so we had like exercise classes, well-being classes, a place to just chill. We had something called Zest Cafe where we invited local inspirational women to talk. It was just like a really supportive environment for local women, and I enjoyed my job because I got to know different types of women in my community and got to show them what they wanted from themselves and how to get it and set goals for them and stuff. So it was a really good active job.
It sounds like something that always keeps you busy.
Yes, it was a very busy job.
And so you were doing this job, you had your children. What were the most important things to you in terms of parenting with your first two children?
Just being hands-on. I wanted to be there for them as much as possible. So that meant that I wanted to be there when they needed me. And we used to do things like outdoors a lot. My eldest is autistic, so he loved to be in the woods building dens, and I used to help, of course. And we used to go geocaching. I just was always there for them, and I still am.
When you had your first two children, did you have any symptoms of arthritis then?
Not really. I don't know if you remember, back in 2009-ish, I hadn't had kids then, but there was this swine flu epidemic.
I do, yeah. Do you remember?
Yes, I got swine flu, and I had like antiviral and post-viral fatigue afterwards. And I felt like I was 90, basically. My joints hurt like the lot. And then I used to get what I thought was tendonitis. But I thought it's because I was at uni typing a lot, you know, in my wrists. But like, I never connected the dots for it to be like an arthritis thing. I just thought this is just, you know.
Yeah, just the way it is.
Yeah.
So when you were pregnant with your children, did you have any other types of symptoms?
No, not really. Nothing at all. Apart from by the time I had Ada, I had been diagnosed. But with the other two, nothing really.
It's plain sailing.
Yeah, I wouldn't say plain sailing. I had pelvic girdle pain, which is basically, it feels like your hips are about to fall off. And I had it for both of them. And I think it's because my bumps are usually massive. I can't go sideways through the door. They're that big. And so it's a lot for like a human to carry. And I had to be signed off for 4 weeks with Ethan. But by the time Levi came along, I was already working for myself. So I didn't really need maternity leave. I just kind of took it easy.
You said about being signed off when you had your first child.
Yeah.
Was that part of your decision to work for yourself? Or because it sounded like the job that you did before was something you were really passionate about.
Yeah, I was signed off because of the pelvic pain, because I was feeling really guilty actually going to my doctor to be like, oh, I'm in pain. I don't think I can last the last 4 weeks before I go on maternity kind of thing. And he was like, you should have come sooner. Why are you suffering? And I was just like, well, but it's because of my work ethic. I don't like to be all like fussy, but it's something I'm trying to change about myself, that if you need help, you need to ask for it.
And I think that's a very difficult thing for people to learn to do. We'll sort of come on to that in a little while, but in terms of almost like the before parts of your life, before you got your diagnosis, you were very active. I've heard that you run some half marathons.
Well, I was training for one. I never got to do it. But I did loads of 10Ks, you know, but I was training for a half marathon. So yeah, that was a sore point. I don't know if you know anything about training for a race like that.
I have actually done a half marathon for some odd reason and will never repeat the experience. So
So you know how long it takes to train your body. So I had slogged through the winter. So it was in the March when I started to feel weird. And the race was April. So I was absolutely gutted because they had already sent me my kit. They had sent me my numbers and all that stuff. So I just shoved it in a drawer and I couldn't look at it. Like for 2 years, I was so devastated because it just represented something bigger than the race. Like the fact that I couldn't do it because of my body.
So let's backtrack a bit. So you were training for your half marathon and that is when you started to get arthritis symptoms.
Yes.
So what happened? Sort of talk me through what made you realise that maybe something was not right.
It actually came on quite suddenly. It was quite bizarre. So on Saturdays, I usually go for a long run because I have more time. And I had got to the halfway point and I just started to feel feverish. Like I could feel my skin. It's a weird thing to say, but I just felt fluey and odd. And so I would run home, but I was just feeling so rough. I got the bus back home. I would usually have a shower, do some yoga to stretch up my muscles, and then have a nap. But that day I literally just fell asleep. That was about 11 and I didn't wake up till like 4 p.m. And when I woke up, my feet were the size of elephants, no word of a lie. Like it was massive. I was freaking out thinking, what is this? And I tried to put weight on it and I couldn't. It hurt so much.
That must have been scary.
It was very scary. So Monday morning I went to my GP and he took one look at it and he said, okay, so here's some anti-inflammatory, let's see what happens. I'll send some bloods to be done, that kind of thing. And then he said, oh, there's no R factor, so it can't be arthritis. And that was kind of it for him. He didn't refer me further. But at the same time, because of my other illnesses, I was seeing a breast surgeon. And I went to a thing with him and he was trying to talk about the plan. And I said, honestly, that is not my concern right now. And I burst into tears. I was like, right now, I can't walk. I can't do anything. I'm just in pain all the time. I need to find out what's going on with me. And nobody seems to want to like help. They just gave me these anti-inflammatories and sent me for bloods and said there's no R factor. So he said, okay, let's see what I can do. So he referred me to the rheumatologist. And 4 weeks later, I was seen. And she basically said there's something called seronegative rheumatoid arthritis, but she can't diagnose me with it yet. She wanted to do some tests. So I went through x-rays and another couple of weeks, she asked me to come back after giving me steroids in the meantime. And she said something to me that stayed with me. She said, this is the worst you'll ever feel. So don't worry, we've got it in hand. Even if it's arthritis, there's always stuff that can be done to help you. So this is like the worst you ever feel in terms of desperation. And I felt so relieved that someone was actually helping me. And so after the prednisolone, which made a huge difference, I came back and she said, yeah, she thinks it is rheumatoid arthritis. So that was when I got my diagnosis. She put me on methotrexate and I went on my way. And that was the beginning of the whole thing for me.
The start of the story.
Yeah.
So at that point when you just got your diagnosis, what was going through your mind? Were you already worried about how you would manage with the two children that you already had at that point?
Yes, because the fatigue was unreal. I thought I knew tiredness because my eldest, he wasn't a sleeper. So I thought I knew what that was, but this was something completely different. It was the worst thing about it. I would take the pain over the fatigue any day. It just drains you completely. You feel useless. And I think that was the hardest bit for me. I just felt like I was this rag doll all the time, just laying across the sofa because I couldn't sit up. And it changed the way I viewed myself and I did not like it at all. But I think with time now, I'm more accepting of that part of my diagnosis because what are you going to do?
In terms of how that kind of made you feel, come on to that a bit later, but practically, do you think that already having other health conditions helped you to kind of manage the diagnosis, or did it make it worse because you knew that it was kind of a thing for life at that point?
It made me feel worse because I was like, I really don't need another thing. I used to consider myself quite a healthy person, ironically. I was like, I don't understand why these diagnoses are coming in thick and fast, because right after I got diagnosed for arthritis, I got another diagnosis a couple of months afterwards. So practically, it didn't really change anything per se in the beginning because my kids were in school. So I think the only thing it changed was my need for childcare. I depended so much on the childcare settings and schools. So before I was like, if they said they were closing for some reason, I'd be like, okay. But since I had my diagnosis, I was like, oh, no, you can't do this to me. What am I going to do? And I start panicking about planning about how I'm going to cope with the children for the day, what we're going to do and how I'm going to manage.
Did you explain to them?
I did in a roundabout way.
Yeah, they were presumably quite little.
Yeah,
at the time.
They were quite young and they would ask like pointed questions like, what's wrong with your feet? Or why is that joint huge? You know, poking it, you know.
You've got to love children for their lack of inhibitions.
Yeah, and you just have to explain to them.
What about your husband? How did you and your husband adapt your lives to manage the situation?
He definitely was my rock because I didn't feel like I could talk to many people about it. So my husband was able to listen to me on days where I wouldn't stop crying or days where I'd be like, I can't do this, this and this. And he was like, well, don't do them. You know, that kind of
thing. Sounds very simple, but
yes. But I was like, oh, but I need to do them. He was like, well, I'll do them then, you know, that kind of thing. And so he picked up quite a lot of housework in the beginning because I just couldn't do that at the time because obviously I was just in a lot of pain. So I was just doing the bare minimum, really. So even driving was painful So by the time I'd done all the trips we needed to do for the day, I was absolutely wiped. So my husband was really good at helping me out in that sense.
Obviously, that was once you got your diagnosis. How long was it then until you found out that you were going to have another baby?
2 years.
And it was a bit of a surprise?
It was a massive shock, because after we had our now middle child, my husband had a vasectomy.
Oh, okay, definitely a shock then.
So, yeah, it was a huge shock, massive. I found out I was pregnant in the November. In the July, I had had a double mastectomy. So I was just healing from quite a major surgery. And I was looking forward to living life again. Because the weird thing about that surgery was, for the first month after I had my double mastectomy, I had no arthritis pain.
Really?
It was the most surreal thing. I just felt normal. I felt tired, but I felt normal. And I don't know what it was or why. But I was like, ooh, things are looking up, you know, that kind of thing. So that was the summer. And then by the autumn time, I started to feel a bit tired. And I was like, oh no, the fatigue's back. By that point, 6 months before that, I had swapped from methotrexate to leflunomide. So I was like, but leflunomide doesn't make me tired, because usually with methotrexate, I take it on a Friday because I'm literally wiped the whole weekend. So I was like, I don't know why I'm so tired. Why is the fatigue back? And then my pain started to creep up a bit more, that kind of thing. And then in the November, I found out I was pregnant, and I was just like, what? And because we weren't planning on having a baby, I was still on my leflunomide. So the first thing I thought after I saw the two lines, I panicked, because I was like, that's still in my system. So I made a call to my rheumatologist, and I was like, oh my goodness, this has happened. So we sought some specialist pharmaceutical advice, and they came back and they said, like, it should be fine, don't worry, but I would need to have extra scans and a more in-depth one with fetal medicine. So just to make sure everything was fine with the baby. And luckily, she was okay. And I don't recommend it at all. The anxiety alone was really bad.
And at the point that you found out and obviously went through all that anxiety over the medication that you were taking, did you think at that point about once the baby was born that you might have to do some things differently?
Oh, yes. Yeah, definitely. Because with my boys, I carried them in slings most of the time. Because of the way we parent, we like to keep our babies close, and that involves them being in slings on us. And I knew I could not do that this time, at least not as much. And then we usually put our babies in cloth nappies, but I have a hard enough time keeping up with the regular laundry without increasing it with nappies. So that had to change. But the biggest thing that I had to get used to was the fact that, unlike the other two, this one was not going to be breastfed.
Yeah, of course.
So because I had that double mastectomy, so I no longer could breastfeed her, so it was really hard for me. But to be honest, it was a blessing in disguise, because that meant my husband could help.
Yeah, that's true. You don't have to get up every single time.
Yeah, I still had to do the feed and stuff, but he went and got the bottles and made up the formula and got the baby from the crib for me, so I didn't have to get out of bed at all, you know, which is what he's always done. So it wasn't that much different. So yes, all those things came to the fore, and I'm glad I had a couple of months to get my head around it, because it was still quite difficult.
Yeah, and you said that getting your diagnosis kind of changed how you felt about as a person, because you used to being very, very busy and juggling lots of different things. At this point, did you start to change how you felt as a mother, because you had to change the way that you parented your children?
Yes and no. I just focused on how I could still be that responsive parent, and I researched a lot, and I came up with quite a few good resources that helped me to see that actually you can be a responsive parent and bottle feed. So I just tried to find a positive way of looking at what I had.
Where did you get your support from in this period before you had your daughter?
So how I found Arthur's Place was by searching young people arthritis, because when I went to my first local arthritis group, they were all 50 plus, you know, bar two people. And I was like, young people must have this. Like, what do they do? How do they manage their lives? You know, I was just curious about that. And I bumped onto a page that said Project Mum. So I clicked on it, read through it, and I thought, okay, cool. And I said, I need to join the group. So I did, and it's been really good to have people in the same boat that I could just ask a question and someone would have already been there, you know. It's lovely.
Were you looking for anything specific when you found Project Mum, or was it just by chance that you came across it?
It was just by chance. You know, when you find the website and you're just exploring it. So when I typed in young people arthritis and I came upon Arthur's Place, then I spent a couple of hours like reading the website, and then I came across Project Mum and I thought, oh, okay, I'm a mum. And so I read through it that way. So I wasn't really looking for anything in specific. I was just looking for how young people manage their lives.
And so when you found it, what did you like about it? What was the most useful resource in Project Mum?
I liked that they had real life mums commenting, and also experts as well. So that was good, because I like real life experience, but I also quite like to hear what experts have to say.
And would you recommend that for other young people with arthritis who might be having a baby or thinking about having a baby?
Yeah, definitely. And also I would recommend joining the group itself, because that's a massive resource. There's loads of people there who can help you and support you if you need to vent. Like, they know what that feels like, because we have this Zoom meeting and I was just able to say, oh my goodness, what is it with like toddler groups having you sit down, stand up 300 billion times? And people could totally relate, because that's something that other mums just take for granted. Like, trying to do the hokey cokey with my 25-pound baby is not going to work. So yeah, I really love having people who get it. It's like, I can't overstate how important that is to me.
Yeah, and I think that's a theme that runs through all of these podcasts, in terms of whatever particular life stage people are at, them finding Arthur's Place, and it really resonates with what they need. So once your daughter was born, how did you adapt the way that you managed? Obviously, she's 18 months old now, you said. So what have you done differently over those past 18 months to what you did with your boys?
I minimized the amount of time I need to go up the stairs, for one. I have two of everything, so I don't need to go up the stairs. Plus, it does help having other children. So now, having older boys, being able to say, can you grab me this, can you go here and do this, or even my eldest, make yourself some noodles please. You know, that's the difference. I think trying to minimize how much energy I expend, because knowing that I need to keep a significant amount back to get me through the night with my daughter, and also just rejigging my working life. So I decided to find something I could do from home, and I've always been a writer, but I'd never really taken it seriously. And so that is what I focused on while Ada used to put her in my sling, sit at my desk and write articles for people. And that was how we got through lockdown, because lockdown was a different kind of hell, because I had to homeschool the boys in the morning, in the afternoon, and then once my husband came back, I would actually start my work day.
Gosh.
So it was not the nicest, and there was no way I could sustain that schedule. So as a consequence, once I stopped shielding, my daughter got put in nursery, which is the earliest I've ever put any of my children in nursery. She was 1 year, 1 week old. My boys are usually 2.5, 3 by the time I put them in nursery. So that was the biggest difference, because I just felt like I needed some time to myself to actually think after that year and a bit that we just had and shielding with her 24/7 for months and months and months. And once the boys went back to school. So yeah, I think I had a little bit of guilt about it until like my mum was like, don't you dare.
Good for her.
So yeah, there we are.
I wanted to ask you about that actually, because you talked before about using running as a form of escapism. So how did you kind of almost get time to yourself?
If I'm being brutally honest, I'm someone who needs time to myself to be able to function better. I find that if I don't take that time, I can be a bit more irritable. And so I did quite a lot of meditation and yoga, a bit more than I would usually do. And I didn't get that at all for months and months. So that is why I was just like, do you know what? You can go to nursery.
And do you think that the fact that you'd had to previously make adaptations that maybe you would have preferred not to make, do you think that having had to do those things already made the decision to send your child to nursery a bit easier because you knew that it would be beneficial in the long run?
Yes, definitely. And as with anything I overthink about, I talked to my counsellor about it and she was like, what about you? You keep talking about other people's needs. What about your needs? And I'm really glad I have her in my life because she tells me all the time, what about you? And it makes me stop and think, yeah, what about me? You know? So, yeah, it was after talking about it, it was like a no-brainer, to be honest.
Tell me a bit about juggling being a mum with your work. So you said to me previously that you don't like to use your arthritis as an excuse and that this has been tricky when you've been trying to get adaptations and things that you needed before you worked for yourself. Do you think that the more kind of full and active a life you have and the more that you put in at work, the less people are willing to help you out when you need those adaptations?
Yeah, I think so. Definitely.
They thought you could cope?
Yeah. They just assume you can cope or that was then, you should be better by now kind of thing. But I don't ask them for help, so why should they offer to help me? It's tricky because I have this thing about not looking vulnerable in front of other people. I don't know. It's not healthy at all because I've done a lot of reading around that. And actually, within vulnerability comes courage. And you need to be able to speak your truth. Because times when I have bared my soul, I have been actually surprised at how many people go, do you know what? Thank you for saying that. Like, I feel the same. Is there anything we can do to help? You know? But it just makes me feel so uncomfortable. And I don't know how to overcome that. But to do my life, I need to plan. And every Sunday night, I sit down with my planner. And I plan out my week. And that's just the key to living my life.
How does that work with something like a chronic illness where you have no idea of how it might fluctuate or how it might affect you on any given day?
Yes, I have allowances for that. So basically, when it comes to living, I only do one big thing a day.
Okay, that's a good system.
Yes, so I only do one big thing a day, which gives me space. If I was poorly, then the day's cancelled, basically. But it won't be too much of a thing to be like rescheduling that big thing for another time. If you pack too much into your day, it's trickier to be flexible when things like a flare pops out at you, you know. And also, it helps to have multiple babysitters because that's what I have to do. So if I'm feeling really poorly, I have really good childcare and I ring the nursery and say, can Ada come in for this day? That's not her usual day. And she usually has space. Or can the boys come for after school club, please? Which will buy me a couple of hours for me to sleep and then come and get them, you know, that kind of thing. So I think whilst planning is the backbone of my life, I have come a long way because I used to be quite regimented about it. Now it's quite flexible, but for my own mental health, I need to know what I'm doing when I'm doing it. and that way I don't feel too overwhelmed with all the stuff I need to do.
That makes sense. So you talked about kind of finding it difficult to be vulnerable and sort of let people, I guess, help you or be less independent at times. Is the ability to do that more freely something that you're going to actively try and pass on to your children?
Oh, yeah, definitely, because I want them to be able to ask for help, because we are a community and they are blessed with fab family and fab friends and family friends as well who love them so much. And I would hate for them not to be able to ask one of them for help, even if it's not us, you know. I want my boys to be able to reach out as they grow older, definitely.
So one more question about parenting. What's your secret weapon? Have you got any go-to parenting hacks that our listeners might like to try and use?
I've touched on planning your week. I can't stress that enough. But also, don't beat yourself up about stuff. Just like if the day doesn't go as the way that you want it to go, this is a mantra I always use. I say, not every day is a good day, but there is good in every day.
Oh, I really like that. I might have to write that down.
Yeah, I have like a little plaque that has it on as well. And that helps me be like, okay, don't throw the day away. It's not started very well, but even if it's just take a cup of tea, sit down, take a breather, watch episode of your favorite show that makes you laugh. That can reset you, you know, and you can try again. And if you can't try again, it's okay to say it's the end of the day for me. Like, I'm done now. It's absolutely fine. So that's the one thing I would say to parents, because I think we don't cut ourselves enough slack, and we need to, because we're doing such a lot.
I think that's excellent advice for anyone who's a parent. Do you have any advice for arthritis sufferers in general, whether they're parents or not?
I think that could apply, because when you're young with arthritis, you have goals and dreams that you want to do, and sometimes your body doesn't let you. And I think you need to ease up a bit. And I think, like, this might sound a bit flouncy, but I stopped seeing my body as the enemy. I started to see that my body and I are on the same team. And that mindset change for me has been helpful, because I want to help my teammate be as well as it can, you know, and vice versa. My body doesn't want me to be ill. It just needs extra help. And like in the past, before I got arthritis, I just used to really hate my body because it just wouldn't behave. But now I say, do you know what? Thank you for housing me, and let's see what we can achieve, and just be a bit more kinder to yourself, I think.
I think that's really good advice. Obviously, we've talked so much about you as a parent and your children, and clearly they're obviously super, super important to you. What do you hope that they learn from watching you parent them with a chronic illness?
Before I got arthritis, I used to be so nervous about my children ever knowing I was less than perfect, especially when I used to be hit with like a bout of depression, or if I was laid on the couch from endometriosis, like hurting. I used to be like, oh my goodness, I don't want them to remember this when they grow older. But actually, I want them to see that, yes, mum had loads of like stuff against her and she had lots to deal with, but our house was always filled with love and she always did her best for us. And that is something that I want my children to carry on, because I think I don't want them to be limited by anything that might crop up for them. For example, my autistic son, he's amazing and he has such great talents, and I wouldn't want him to be limited by what he's not as good at doing, you know. And I think that growing up. I just want them to be able to look at me and see, okay, so she had all this going on, but she was still able to do A, B, and C, you know.
Finally, what is the best thing about having children for you?
Oh my goodness.
If you can pick one.
Yeah. Okay. Without sounding over dramatic, but having children is 100% the best thing I've ever done in my life. And they make me laugh. Their cuddles are amazing. Their little personalities and seeing bits of myself and bits of my husband in them in really unique ways is something that I cherish. And I think just seeing a new human being growing up, because just seeing how they change over the years, it's just fantastic. I love it.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Lucy, for coming on the podcast and for sharing your story with me. I think it will be of interest to so many Arthur's Heroes listeners, whether or not they're planning to have children in the immediate future. And thank you to your family as well.
Oh, it was our pleasure. Thank you.
Listeners with an arthritis diagnosis should talk to their GP or rheumatology specialist for guidance on becoming pregnant if they are planning to start a family or think they may want to have a family in the future. Your GP or rheumatology specialist will be able to advise on the best way to manage your arthritis symptoms and treatment plan. You can check out the Arthur's Place Project Mum Wellness Kit, which has free resources designed to support young adults living with an arthritis diagnosis through pregnancy and parenting, which is available at arthursplace.co.uk. If you need any support for mental health, please check out Every Mind Matters or the NHS websites. And there's also Mind, the mental health charity, where there are some excellent resources. Thank you for listening to Arthur's Heroes. For more podcasts, information and access to loads of great content for young adults with arthritis, please visit arthursplace.co.uk. You can also find other young adults to chat to in the Arthur's Place social Facebook group. Follow Arthur's Place on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram, and find out more about Codeword Pineapple, the pin badge for people with an invisible disability, at codewordpineapple.org.uk. Thank you to Novartis UK for their support in the production of this podcast.